The Initial Reaction Podcast, where a three-game losing streak is definitely cause for panic! I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers.
No, it is not. Stop it.
Panic!
Spectrum Sports. Stop it. It's July. Stop.
So you agree that the Brewers are, in fact, free-falling because there's so much season to go. They'll surely give it up by the end of the year.
I did have a dream that earlier in the week that the lead would be gone at the end of the week. I don't think that in real life, but apparently subconsciously I do not have much faith in the Brewers.
There are two problems. One is that the Cubs haven't lost since the All-Star break, so if they continue to win, there's pretty much nothing the Brewers will be able to do. And second of all, even though obviously three-game losing streak is not cause for panic, it's happened many times this year already, it's hard when you lose three games in 3 days. That's a big blow. Like, you don't just make up three games in 3 days. That's something that could linger for a long time. I mean, how many weeks there were the Brewers up a game or tied or, like, you know, up a game and a half? Like, that stuff, that's a tough blow. It really is.
Yeah, but you do make up three games in 3 days. Like, they had just won 11 out of 14. Like,
yes.
It was weird because I just, like, this whole year, I was saying, we keep waiting for the Cubs to start winning, and we wait for the Cubs to go on a stretch, and I kept using this, of winning 13 out of 15 games or something like that. And yet the Brewers, like, just did it. Like, all these things that we were saying kind of couldn't happen or that wouldn't happen, the Brewers have done. Like, when Junior Guerra went down, we were saying, like, well, their rotation's toast. It's been fine. And then Chase Anderson went down, and it got better. You know, and then we kept saying for the Cubs to make all these runs, and they never have, but the Brewers have been the ones doing it. Like, there's a lot of reasons that this team is where they are. This isn't a fluke anymore. It's not that they're great, but this isn't a fluke.
We'll talk about some trade targets, because as we are now in the latter portion of July, the Brewers are, you know, in first place, so they're in contention to be making some deals to add to their ball club, bolster their lineup. I'm going to give you nine names that come to my mind. I don't know if JP has any thoughts on that, but nine names of some potential trade targets. It's always fun to go into the hot stove and stick your head in and see what happens. After that, we talk a little high school baseball. The state tournament is coming up on Friday at Capco Park in Mequon. Franklin, Marquette, West Bend West, and Keele are the final four teams remaining. West Bend West undefeated and the heavy favorite to win the 2017 gold trophy. But if I
can't go to that tournament, is it on TV somewhere?
You know, funny enough, for the first time in what I can remember, actually the semifinals are live and on TV on Spectrum Sports, I believe.
You're probably right. They are slated to start at 11:30. I think Mother Nature might have a hand in that. But
yeah,
11:30 semifinals,
forecast.
Sixth final, all live on Spectrum Sports.
Could be pretty fun. The 6 o'clock championship game follows the two semifinals on Friday. Very fun park, Capco Park. It's all turf, which a lot of fields are now, but you know, with the wind swirling right off of Lake Michigan, is literally within view of the stadium stands. You get some pretty crazy fly ball situations, and the ball takes a big bounce off the turf and goes to the, like, we've seen a lot of inside the park home runs and triples there. It's sort of a funhouse environment sometimes for baseball, but it'll be a good time. It'll be a quick tournament. Summer baseball over in one day. Four teams. You get the two semis in the championship game. Again, Spectrum Sports is the place for that. We'll talk about high school baseball. There's something, a particular issue that I wanted to talk to you related to the new pitch counts that went into effect this past season. But let's start with the big league baseball team. The Milwaukee Brewers are again still in first place, up 2.5 as we record this on Thursday. The Cubs unfortunately don't stop losing here, and that's made it difficult for the Brewers to maintain the 5.5 game lead that they had going into the break. But it's trade season. Pretty clearly the Brewers and a lot of teams are going to be looking for pitchers, starters, relievers, maybe a position player. It's not likely, I guess, but it is possible. So I wanted to give you, JP, nine names that I thought the Brewers could potentially be in on. The buzz today is that the big name is, of course, Sonny Gray, the Oakland Athletics pitcher. And that's not even one of my nine names because everyone knows Sonny Gray. I don't think that deal can get done without giving up Lewis Brinson, who is tearing it up at AAA and is the team's top prospect. But Ken Rosenthal suggesting today that maybe it could get done. And I don't know how you feel. I've always felt that for the Brewers to get the piece they really need, which is a starting pitcher like Sonny Gray, they're going to have to give up Lewis Brinson plus two other really top prospects Maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe this can get done. I don't know.
I need to be convinced one way or the other on this trade thing. I've been going back and forth on whether or not they need to and whether or not they should, and I just don't know where I stand. I think, like, does Sonny Gray make the team better? Yes. And does he make your team better for the next 3 years? Yeah. So that's good, right? Like, that's a good thing. And as far as the prospects go, I'm driving myself insane. They have every outfielder in minor league baseball as a part of their top 30 prospects. Like, it's disgusting how many of them they have, because it's Brinson, it's Phillips, it's Corey Ray, it's even going back to guys like Trent Clark, it's Ryan Cordell. Like, it goes on and on and on. And guess what? They only need three, you know, and that doesn't include Ryan Braun, Keon Broxton, and Domingo Santana. So as much as I keep saying to myself and anybody else, like, no, do not trade Brinson, do not trade Phillips, do not trade any of these guys. On the other hand, you only need three of them, and you have like 10 guys that are going to factor into your lineup. So I don't know. I need help.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to know, because first of all, Ryan Braun is no spring chicken, and you hate to get rid of a guy like Brinson, who could be a big time major league powerhouse for several years, knowing that Braun could be hurt for a long period of time again next year or the year after that. You can't count on him anymore being in the lineup for more than, I would say, half the season. You can't expect that he's definitely going to be there. Domingo Santana is fine. He's got some holes in his game, but he's been very good. Keon Broxton has struggled at times. I love the guy, and I think he's a great major league center fielder, but he hasn't had a phenomenal year. So you don't throw away top talents regardless of position just because you have a lot of guys at that particular spot. You don't throw those guys away. But like you said, I mean, Corey Ray should be absolutely in trade talks because he's a couple years away. It's not clear that he's at the level of Lewis Brinson, who, as far as I'm concerned, is the only true superstar of the minor league system at this point. It's not clear that he's going to be that guy. So he's more of a lottery ticket type player. I mean, Brett Phillips, I think we're seeing that that his game is going to have some limitations, but he's still a major league center fielder, which in Oakland, where the outfield is huge, I mean, I would think the defensive component is a big factor there. Great defensive center fielder. So I think these are the guys that are going to be traded if they can find a suitor, because it's not as if other teams aren't going to be able to demand high price tags. Look at the relievers that have been traded already. The Nationals, for example, got two relievers from Oakland and had to pay the farm for it. So you can imagine what Sonny Gray is going to cost.
Yeah, and the other problem is that we don't know what it's going to be. That, first of all, what if a prospect comes back? What if it's Sonny Gray and they're, you know, their version of Corey Ray?
Oh, maybe the Nelson Cruz trade from several years ago is what you're suggesting.
Sure. What if there's a prospect coming back that changes it? I think the problem comes in where we don't know what's going to be offered. First of all, we don't know what the final deal is until it's there. And we also don't know that what was offered, what else was on the table. Like, maybe whatever the deal is, maybe David Stearns killed it. Maybe they wanted, you know, an additional player, and Stearns talked him out of it and gave him something else. Like, there's so many variables to it, where you don't know what it's going to be. And I think until we know what it's going to be, it almost doesn't even make sense to even talk about. Because what if it's Sonny Gray for Brett Phillips straight up, right? That's a pretty good deal. Well, then if you throw in maybe Lucas Ersig, well, then it's maybe still a pretty good deal. I don't know. Everything is so dependent on what the actual deal is that I feel weird even discussing it.
Yeah, that's true. It will not be for Brett Phillips for Sonny Gray straight up.
What?
We know this.
Come on.
That would be a nice deal for the Brewers, from the Brewers' perspective. It will not be that. So here are my names of other guys that I think the Brewers could go after. A lot of them are relief pitchers, because that does seem to be still the primary need that the Brewers have. And the first one is a high-profile one, Zach Britton from Baltimore, famously the closer that did not pitch last year in the playoffs when he would have been such a huge value. One of the most dominant closers in baseball, well, the most dominant last year, and a left-handed guy. He's owed $12 million going forward. He's been hurt this year, and so another guy on my list is Brad Brock of the Orioles as they get ready to sell off some pieces. Brad Brock, who's very good as well as a setup guy, he might actually be the higher value guy at this point because he's cheaper and he hasn't had forearm problems this year like Zach Britton has. The Brewers are in this unique position where not only do they have a lot of minor league guys that they can trade, they also have a lot of financial flexibility. So they could say to the Orioles, we will take on the entire contract, and that could sort of mitigate what they're giving up in prospects. I don't think this will happen, but because I still think Zach Britton will command very good prospects in addition to a team needing to pick up the entire contract. But I find that as a compelling possibility for the Milwaukee Brewers.
That's fine. I support you.
The other relievers on my list, Addison Reed of the New York Mets. The Mets are getting ready to sell big. He's got $7.75 million for next year on his contract, so that's something to keep an eye on. But he's a guy that a lot of teams are going to be interested in. So that's two. Justin Wilson of the Detroit Tigers, another guy who's going to be in very high demand, having a sensational year, and he's RB eligible in 2018, so he's still under control. I think a lot of teams are going to be in on him, and I think ultimately the bidding war will preclude the Brewers. I think if the Brewers were going to be able to, or willing to go all in for a top reliever for top prospects, you wouldn't have seen them acquire Tyler Webb from the Yankees, more of an under-the-radar acquisition for, granted, a decent prospect in Garrett Cooper, but not a top 10 guy. I think that's what it's going to take to get one of these relief arms. So you're probably not going to see the Brewers get too involved, or they already would have been involved when they brought in Tyler Webb. Pat Neshek is a guy a lot of people are talking about. He's a 37-year-old dude for the Phillies, Wisconsin ties, a guy that, again, a lot of teams are after. Seems like the type of fit maybe for the Brewers, not top shelf, but just under top shelf perhaps. I mentioned Brock, guy that would be a starter. Jason Vargas of Kansas City, the Royals are one of those teams that is in that position where they're three games under 500, not clear if they're going to buy or sell, what their forecast is going to be. So I still think Vargas, who's had a couple really bad starts lately, but wasn't on the All-Star team, he was, so he's a valuable commodity as well. Do you think the Brewers, if they don't get Sonny Gray, will still go after a starting pitcher? I mean, you talked about how, you know, Chase Anderson, he's going to be coming back. He talked about how they have been able to hold that part of it together. What do you think about that?
I think they're going to help their team for this season and the next couple years. I mean, I don't think that it's going to be just David Stearns doesn't seem like the type of guy who says he's going to go all in this year or trying to win or a quote buyer. I think he's going to try and improve his team now with the exact same mindset that he did over the offseason. You know, like I don't feel like he's going to get a starting pitcher because that's what he thinks the team needs to win the World Series this year. I think if he can get, you know, the reason Sonny Gray comes up is because he's controllable for a few more years. I think that's the reason why. So if he can get something like that where it's a 1-3 year, well, yeah, 2-3 year thing, then I think it makes sense. I don't see him doing it just to do it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think they're looking big picture at all times. So that does limit their options, though, because there are going to be a lot of players that are more, quote, rentals. You saw J.D. Martinez of the Detroit Tigers get traded on Tuesday. He's a major bat, and the Diamondbacks didn't really have to give up a ton to get him. So you start to think that is the best way to improve. If you want to maintain your farm system, that is the best way to improve yourself for a postseason run and not have to give up a ton. Obviously, the Brewers are kind of caught in the middle here as well, where they do want to make a move now toward this postseason, but the bigger picture has always been in play as well.
So here's my question for you then. So who in their system is untouchable right now? Like of the top 10 guys, so is Brinson untouchable? There's no way you can include him in a deal.
No, I don't feel that way. I feel as though, and I said this on the roundtable a little while back, there are zero untouchable assets anywhere in the Milwaukee Brewers organization, in my opinion. I personally don't think they can get the value for Ryan Braun that I think he's more valuable to them by far than he would be in any sort of deal. So in that sense, I don't know if you want to call him untouchable, but he's just a guy that I think will still be here, certainly.
That's more unmovable than untouchable.
Unmovable, yeah. And I don't want to put it like that because I don't think that contract is prohibitive or anything. I just don't. I think there's enough baggage with the injuries and the PED stuff, I guess, that's going to keep him from being a top shelf return guy. I don't think there's anybody who's untouchable because they have such great depth at every position. You move Lewis Brinson, you still have the four guys you mentioned as great outfielders in the organization. You know, you move a shortstop, you move a San Diaz. You still got shortstops in the organization, not to mention the fact that your starting shortstop is 22, 21 years old, is having a phenomenal breakout year. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility here. So there's no one, no single person that I would say, I really don't think the Brewers would move that guy in any situation.
Yeah, and again, it's all trade dependent too. Like for me, I went through the top 10. I have three of them. I think Lewis Brinson, Josh Hader, and Brandon Woodruff are my three guys that you have to be insane to deal, but it's situation dependent. If you're trading Lewis Brinson for Zach Greinke, well, guess what? You're no longer untouchable, you know? So I think it's all situation dependent, but those are the three where if you trade them, I think you're insane.
I don't know about Brandon Woodruff. I mean, he's had a great last couple years in the organization. He's sort of been, I don't know if you call it a late bloomer or a little bit of a surprise. He has surged way up there. Corbin Burns, a recent draft pick who's having a tremendous year, is another guy who comes up a lot. You don't want to be cavalier about getting rid of potential starting pitcher options. I mean, that's the whole point, right? To get Sonny Gray, you need starting pitching. It doesn't grow on trees. You don't want to get rid of guys that could be those guys down the road, but it is so hard to develop those pitching prospects, so hard that you really have to sort of play it the way they've played. I mean, the Cubs did it this way. They produced all their position players and then traded for the pitching they needed. So in a way, this is a formula that has worked out many times before, and between injuries and they really seem, with the Hader, by easing him in as a bullpen guy and knowing that he'll probably be a starter down the road, they really seem committed to thinking this guy is a major, major part of the future. So yeah. I imagine that he's not going to get moved. Right. Anyway, so I think I've given you six names. I'll run through the last couple. There's a chance Jeff Smarja starts getting some interest from the San Francisco Giants. They're really struggling this year. There's a chance that he's available really close to the deadline, but I'm guessing a couple other starters are going to have to get dealt first before they really start to entertain offers there. A guy like D. Gordon, he's owed a lot of money, $38 million over the next three seasons on the Marlins, but if the Brewers are dissatisfied with their second base situation and they really want a speed/leadoff guy, especially as they look toward the postseason, that's a possibility there. If they feel like VR is not going to cut it, I don't think they'll make that call. But if, you know, there's also like Jed Lowry from the A's is an infielder who could be available, a second baseman who could be available, maybe in the potential Sonny Gray trade. So that's an outside chance that they will address. And then my favorite one is Yu Darvish from the Rangers. There's a rental, but if the Rangers are kind of in a position where they're looking to move some pieces, you know, if they decide they couldn't get Gray, or imagine this, they get Gray and then Darvish at the last second becomes available for an unexpectedly cheap value. Now that would be something. How about that? Adding two arms to the starting rotation. Obviously it would cost something, but it would be a massive move toward a team, you know, toward improving the team for the postseason that is to come.
So assuming they don't get two, let's say that you get Sonny Gray, what's your rotation look like? I mean, I guess you would probably set it up in terms of the playoffs. So like, who are you trying to line up as your, well, the playoffs, you only need like three or four, but so the rest of the season, if you could make your ideal rotation for the rest of the season, what does it look like?
Well, it's really ugly. Even if you have Sonny Gray, I still don't think this rotation is good enough to carry the team the rest of the way. That's why I'm attracted to the idea of really bolstering the starting rotation, even if it costs a little bit more in the prospect return. But yeah, Sonny Gray's your number one. Jimmy Nelson's your number two. To me, there's no question there. I think, Junior Guerra showed some things on Tuesday, even though the Brewers lost the game, that suggests he might be able to be a three or four guy in a rotation. So I think.
Wait, what are you talking about? I thought he was the ace. I thought he was the ace of the staff.
That was coming into the year? I don't know. I've never fully.
That was all pretty dumb last year.
Yeah, he had a phenomenal year last year. Never really bought into the idea that guy was going to sustain that, just basically because of his age.
How did that happen?
He was enough of an enigma that it was possible that he maintained this, and he throws a pitch that can confuse hitters pretty well, but also leaves them open to injury, and that's exactly what's happened, even though it had nothing to do with the pitching part of it. So if he stays healthy, I guess there's still a possibility. There's some bullets left in the arm there for sure. So those are your three guys. I mean, Chase Anderson fits in as number three if he comes back healthy. At this point, it's a wild card because you're talking about health. Hard to know where that stands. And then I guess Matt Garza, if you still need a fifth guy, you're talking playoffs where you maybe wouldn't. But at this point, Garza is a big part of the equation. He's been fine. He hasn't been bad at all this year.
And Garza ahead of Davies?
Yeah. Oh,
Davies
gosh.
Has been pretty terrible. He keeps winning games, which is the most meaningless stat in the world.
The most frightening thing I saw today were comparisons of Braden Looper's numbers to Zach Davies' numbers. They're eerily similar. And eerily similar in the big way that Zach Davies gets all this run support, and Brandon Looper did too. I mean, that's why he won games. The run support was off the charts. And there's going to be a massive correction. Unless Zach Davies figures it out, he is absolutely the weak link in the rotation. It's not even a question to me. I don't care if he's got 11 wins. That guy has struggled. So unless he figures something out, and he very well could, he's very young, these things could happen. But if that doesn't happen, there's no way you can rely on him to start in the playoffs if knock on wood, the Brewers somehow still make it that far.
Yeah, and Brent Suter's been phenomenal, but I don't think that's a long-term solution, at least not this year. So, all right, so that's your rotation going forward, huh?
Good to know. I mean, yeah, Brent Suter sure has been great. I mean, he's looked a lot better than he had in past years. So definitely a nice wild card to have. I still think that's a guy that you have because other guys are hurt at this point.
If you have Nelson Gray, Anderson Guerra, and Garza, that can get you to the division title this year. It still can. It's not great. But that's not bad at all, because if you're getting Nelson can give you, you know, seven innings of one run ball, Gray the same thing, Anderson the same thing, Guerra maybe, you know, he's shown that he can do it and then he'll give you four runs the next time. And then Garza has been pretty good and pretty consistent this year. I mean, that's not a bad rotation.
And even to me, it doesn't feel like a great rotation, but there has to be a little bit of a correction in how we view pitching staffs in general because of how great the offense has become again. You know, there's a lot of stats out there about the number of home runs getting hit and runs and ERAs going just ballooning. You know, if you're a 4.00 ERA guy, you cannot look at that as problematic anymore. I mean, that's a solid rotation guy right there. So there's a lot of, you know, what might sound on paper like an unimpressive rotation still might be pretty good. And I think that's what you have there. And the Brewers have been good. Their rotation has been decent, you know, as it ranks among the, you know, as you line up all the teams. So that would be, you know, certainly addressing, adding one more starting pitcher like Sonny Gray would be a huge shot in the arm. And honestly, I think that's going to happen. I think they're going to go get Sonny Gray. I think they have the capital to do it. And I think they will.
Yeah. And they have the cap room and it can help them for the next couple seasons, too. So there's a chance.
Yes. So hopefully the Brewers' magic continues or picks back up after their three-game losing streak here. Let's talk a little high school baseball, JP.
Okay.
I was at the sectionals on Monday checking out a couple different teams, took some photos. Franklin snuck through they played very well in winning the New Berlin Eisenhower sectional, and Oak Creek, the top seed there, fell. West Bend West had to survive against Homestead in the sectional semifinal, walk off in the eighth. They are undefeated. They have an incredible pitching staff and should be heavily favored to win the state title this year. Marquette gets through the Brookfield Central sectional. They played well and had, it was kind of an evenly matched sectional there with Marquette, the clear number one, and then like 14 teams that were evenly ranked. There were a lot of upsets. Marquette ended up rising to the top. And Keel from the northern part of the state, or at least north of Milwaukee part of the state, they're sort of, you know, south of the Fox Valley, so I don't know if you call them north, but they will be descending on Mequon on Friday for the state tournament. Interesting thing this year, JP, it used to be pitchers were limited to save their arms, limited by innings count. You could only throw seven innings, and I don't remember all the specifics, but you could only throw seven innings over a certain period of time until you had to rest a couple days. This year, they added it as pitch counts, which makes much more sense, very representative of the amount of work pitchers are doing. If you throw less than 30 pitches, you can come back the next day. But if you throw between, I believe it's 31 and, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. I think it's 59 maybe, or 49. You need one day rest. If it's 50 to 74, that's 2 days rest. And if it's above 75 to 100, you're only allowed 100 in one game. If you're 75 to 100, you need the full 3 days rest. So JP, that makes a little bit of a puzzle for postseason pitching rotations, doesn't it?
Especially when you have doubleheaders like you do in the sectional finals and in the state tournament. Also, especially just pure summer baseball, all they do is play games. Like this whole season, I tried to find practice days to go and do feature on teams. It's impossible. I mean, especially if you get one or two rainouts, you're playing nearly every single day. So yeah, it's difficult for sure.
And the sectional being two games in one day in the state tournament, actually not as complicated, I would say, as what you have in the regional when you've got back-to-back days that you're playing. because at least when it's back-to-back games, you don't have to take a day of rest. I mean, you can, I think it's you're limited to 100 pitches still, but it's not like if you throw 75 pitches in game one, you can still throw 25, I believe, in game two. You don't have to take the rest of the day off.
Interesting.
So what you have, though, when you have back-to-back days is, if you have an ace pitcher, you have to decide in the first round if you want to use him, because if he goes over 30 pitches, he's out for the second game. And the second game, theoretically, is the better competition as you move up the ladder, up the bracket. So on that first day, if you can either throw him less than 30 pitches, which is most likely not going to be more than an inning or two, you know, at most two innings, maybe two and a half if you're super lucky, or two and an out or two. Or you save him altogether and just hope that, you know, you're still going to be playing the next day. Now, Pewaukee High School, they were seated fourth and probably could have been seated higher in that Brookfield Central sectional. They elected to hold the Woodland Conference Player of the Year, Patrick Tomforti. They elected not to start him against Tosa East, which was a 13 seed, had only, I think, six wins or seven wins. But they had some pretty good pitchers, and that team was better than that seed would indicate. So they made the choice to not pitch him right away. Tosa East scored some runs. They ended up winning the game 4-0, and Pewaukee got bounced. Tomforti ended up coming in later in the game, but by then they were already behind. It's a really tough call. They said they regretted the decision, but they put a lot of thought into it. I happen to think it was the right decision because teams don't want to win just one game. They want to go to the whole, you know, they want to go to the state tournament. So you should set up your rotation like that. You should, you know, you're going to have more than one pitcher anyway, so you might as well let your second or third guy face the perceivably lower, you know, lesser opponent. But it is an extremely tough call in baseball, especially where pretty much anything can happen.
Yeah, and this, you know, when we had talked about this before, I compared it to something like a MLB playoff series, where you save somebody in game six so that you can save them at games, so you can play them in game seven.
Yep.
But it's different because in high school playoffs, in theory, your first opponent is not as good as your second opponent or your third, in theory, again. You know, so to me, that makes sense. You don't need your best pitcher for the first game. You need him more for the second game. In baseball, if it's like game six versus game seven, the teams are good at each time, and you need to use them right away to even get to, you know, it's different arguments for pro baseball versus high school. So I get what Pewaukee did. I understand that they wanted to hold them, and really that team has been so good all year that you would think they'd be able to score more than four runs too. So I totally get it.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's sort of in the specific example, you could say, well, the offense scored zero runs. So it doesn't matter who's pitching. Like, you're going to wind up, you know, you can't expect even your number one guy to go seven shutout innings.
Yeah, they picked a bad day to have a bad day.
Right. So, so that's sort of part of it. The other thing is, you know, you talk about how the summer schedule works. It's very hard to get a read on how good these teams are when you get to the playoffs because in the end, it always comes down to your best pitcher. I mean, Tosa East happens to have a really good 1-2 pitching punch. So those guys might be better than the 3, 4, 5, 6 guys are all getting innings during the regular season. And maybe that leads to a bunch of losses. But if you're facing their number one, they may have a much better chance to win than a normal game. So that's also something you take into consideration, that seeds may not be reflective of how good a team can really be when you get to the playoffs. So in that sense, yeah, you might want to throw your ace because tomorrow's a new day and anything can happen and you don't want to take today for granted, and that's fine. But I still feel like if the team's aspirations are to get to the state tournament, then you do the puzzle, you know, you play the game a little bit. But it's funny, no other sport has this situation where you can't put your best players in position to do what they do best because there are restrictions as far as safety goes. It'd be like only having a quarterback throw so many passes in a game. You know, you can't, you don't have that restriction anywhere else in sports.
Well, where does friend of pod Andrew Grumman come down on this issue?
Yeah, friend of pod Andrew Grumman actually feels opposite of how I feel. He feels that you should throw your best pitcher now, that you there's too many variables to let any game just slide by. Now, there are some situations I think that are obvious. Last year at the state tournament, Ty Weber of Menominee Falls pitched in the championship game. They did not pitch him against Sheboygan Falls in the semifinal. No offense to the teams outside the Milwaukee area. Traditionally, they have not matched up at all with teams from the Milwaukee area when you get to the state tournament. So Menominee Falls felt they could roll the dice. It worked out great. They won the state title for the second year in a row. So there are obvious situations where it makes sense, but then again, you say that, and you know, there have also been games where it seemed obvious in 2008 that West Bend West would beat Kettle Moraine, my favorite example, and that didn't happen. That would be like West Bend West losing this year. It seems almost incomprehensible, but it happened. You know, they ran into a hot pitcher and a hot team. So there's just no prediction. It's an interesting scenario.
Well, if only I could read that conversation back and forth, I'd be a lot happier.
Ooh, you can do that. We're going to put that on the Preps Alcove. You can check that out at LakeCountryNow.com or MyCommunityNow.com. My point counterpoint with one Andrew Grumman, who knows quite a bit about area baseball. And plus, we've got lots of coverage. I mean, you probably want to read about Franklin going to state. I know you do. And Jim Hughes, the manager, or coach, I should say, who has 900 career wins as of late this regular season. You're probably going to want to read about that, I would think. So that is all available for you at MyCommunityNow.com.
900, that's it?
900. Says he's probably not going to do 1,000. Probably not going to go for the grand. Really? But he's going to be close. I mean, he expects to manage. He expects to coach a couple more years, which at this rate could end up with 950 wins. That is on the table. So, he's been around forever, 45 years or something like that. So it's cool, cool to pass yet another milestone. The all-time winningest coach in baseball history in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I did not see your bald head in Oshkosh on Saturday at the high school football all-star games. You were slacking, probably watching it on Spectrum Sports.
Almost definitely.
Good. Well, you can catch some replays of that. It was fun. My favorite story from that, I do sideline reporting during that while Bob Raynard and Matt Menzel handle the game. I'm down on the field getting the stories from the kids. My favorite story was Kyle Gannon from Waukesha West, who was the top fundraiser for the large schools game. I asked him how he did it. And he said a couple different methods. One of them was like going to a grocery store and sitting outside the grocery store and asking for donations,
nice.
Which I thought was a really good idea. Yeah, that was really good. But my favorite by far, in one of his classes, I think the teacher came up with the idea, which is somewhat cruel when you hear, for $10, or I think it was for $10, but maybe it was for an undetermined amount of money each. Students, if they donated, could bring in an item, a food item, and put it in a blender for him to eat.
Oh my gosh, what?
So he had quite the concoction. He said one of the things that was in there was like 3-week-old taco meat.
Oh,
they got put in
no.
There. He's
oh,
this
God.
Big offense. He's this big offensive lineman. So it makes like perfect sense. It was great. So that's one of the ways that he raised money.
Oh, that is fascinating, yeah. But awful.
Is it right?
Oh, that is
I was so,
gross.
Depressed because I couldn't find a picture. I was thinking after the interview, I instantly got on my phone and checked his Twitter feed and I couldn't find it. I was so angry.
That is awesome, I guess. You should
love that. Love big guys before.
I do love big guys. I also just, I don't know, I'm a very picky eater too, so this is a conflicting
isn't that brilliant though? Like
it's
to,
a good idea.
Ask donations and you can, hey, for $20, put something in the blender.
Yeah, sure enough. So the WFCA All-Star Game will be replayed on Spectrum Sports throughout the rest of the summer, I have a feeling.
You know it.
And you can see JP Cadoran's smiling face there. What about Sports Weekly recently? What have we seen on there? Anything else?
I interviewed Luis Arias, the boxer from Milwaukee. He went to Marquette High and Marquette University for 1 year. He's back after a pay-per-view win against a star Russian prospect, Arif Magomedov.
That is not a real name.
That Arif Magomedov. Pretty great.
That's great.
So Arias is now 18-0, looking for his next fight. So
interesting.
He is approaching. He is contender status for a title belt now. So it's getting pretty serious.
Very good. Also at MyOzakiNow.com, just posted a story. Bummer of a story. Chloe Murata of Homestead High School. She was easily one of the best girls basketball players last year and would have been this year, but tore her ACL in a summer league game. Looks like she'll be out for the year. That's a big blow to Homestead that brought back just a ton of talent from last year's team. Murata averaged more than 20 points and 10 rebounds last year and was on our all-suburban team all 3 years thus far and is going to Marquette University for that women's basketball program that's been having so much success. So that's a real tough one, a tough loss. The ACL bug actually hasn't struck a lot lately for some top area talent, but that's that's a tough one for Homestead. So a bit of a bummer this morning to learn of that.
You're a bummer.
I am a bummer. I saw her score 40 points with 22 rebounds in a game last year against Germantown. That was pretty, pretty awesome. Kenzie Schmitz, I think, went 20 and 20 as well. She's going to play at Miami of Ohio this year, so that was a fun game, and unfortunate that she won't be around for her senior season.
Yeah, we're getting into it now. High school football starts in, like, a day.
That's true. The beginning of August is the beginning of practice. So, yep, we are very, very close.
Any ideas, send them my way. I'm saying that both to you, JR, and to anybody listening. Any ideas for our 10th annual high school football kickoff show, let me know.
Obviously, I think you should have me on it, but that is a request that has been denied before.
Yeah,
so
we tried that, and record low ratings.
No, it was not.
You're right. We don't get ratings.
You're right. I knew that as well. So, all right, JP. Well, thanks for joining the Initial Reaction podcast yet again. I guess I'll see you again soon.
No, God, I'm going to see you at a football field soon, aren't I?
Soon. It's coming. Yeah. Maybe even at the – I might even see you at the state baseball tournament, right?
That's Friday. Maybe. You'll certainly see a lot of people with Spectrum shirts on.
That's true. All right. We will chat again soon. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye, everyone.